Sluts and Scholars, a podcast for professionals who prioritize pleasure.
You are listening to a pleasure podcast. For more from our sex podcast collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.
Sluts and Scholars is a podcast produced by Sluts and Scholars Media, LLC. It is a shame-free educational podcast made for your entertainment and informational desires only. The podcast, any opinions we share, and any resources, including social media and emails from us, are not therapy, medical care, or professional advice, and do not create a patient-client relationship. None of the information, opinions, suggestions, resources, or exercises mentioned in this podcast should be used without clearance from your healthcare provider. All opinions, information, and ideas expressed by the guests are solely their own. If you need emergency mental health or medical help, please call 911 or 988 or go to your nearest emergency center. We hope you enjoy the show. Welcome back to another week of Sluts and Scholars, the podcast for professionals who prioritize pleasure. I'm Nicoletta Heidegger, and I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist and sexologist. And this week, I'm welcoming Robbie Apples. He has been a porn star for the past 10 years. He started in the industry as a pursuit to conquer his social anxiety, which we're going to talk about today. He's also an avid oil painter, builder of furniture, filmmaker, and lover of life. Welcome, Robbie.
Thanks for having me. That's okay. Great.
So what's with the apples?
The apples.
How often do you get asked this question? Is that like the first question?
I do get asked it quite a bit.
But for listeners who don't know you, they've got to know.
Yeah. Well, my name started out as Robbie Echo. And when I first got in the industry, you know, I'm a health nut. Like I really changed the quality of my life by changing my diet years and years ago in my early mid 20s. And so when I first joined porn in my late 20s, I would always have healthy snacks. And I found that apples were this great complex carb that if I was feeling sluggish ever, I could just take a few bites of that. And then it would give me long lasting energy to perform. So I would always have apples on set. And then some of these two girls in the industry, they're like, we're going to make a fake Twitter account called Robbie Apples. And we're just going to post photos of you eating apples on set. And it just kind of clicked. I was like, oh, that's great branding. I'm stealing this. Thank you. So then I became Robbie Apples after that.
I also heard that like apples can help people's breath taste good, but I'm hearing that you're saying an apple a day can make you a porn star. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Great. All right. So if you're listening and even wondering how to get into the adult industry, start eating apples.
Yeah. One of the things that I, when I'm at AVN and I'm like selling my merch, one year I just decided to start yelling at people. I'm dressed as an apple too at AVN, and I decided to start yelling at people like, eat healthy and you'll fuck like a porn star, and like, you gotta eat your vegetables, and like, just shouting things like that at them.
I mean, I'm feeling like there's a really good other job in here for you, which is to be like a health dom.
A health dom. Yeah, man. Oh.
Because if I had a dom, like, you know, not necessarily yelling at me, but like, you know, doming me into all the health stuff I have to do for all of my litany of health issues. Like,
yeah,
that would probably help.
I think I could do that. I think that's the one area that I could really dom, like, because I'm not a dom in like other areas, but that area I could really dom. And, it's so funny that that came up because, a while ago on OnlyFans, I had a guy who wanted me to dom him, and I was talking to a friend. I was like, dude, I don't know what to fucking say to him. Like, what should I do? And he was like, dude, you should dom him on having a better life, on eating healthier and stuff. And I was like, oh, that's great. I can do that. And I was like, it just comes so easily. I'm like, okay, yeah. I want to know how often you're meditating. I want to know what your diet is.
Are you breathing deeply?
Yeah. I was so into it. I was so inspired, but that was not what that guy wanted.
Well, I think if you ever want an additional niche, there's a lot of people who need that.
Yeah. That's interesting. I'm going to have to think about that.
Well, keep us posted. So I'm really curious about this, like going into porn as a way to help conquer social anxiety. Like, I think a lot of people, when they look at porn performers, they, especially like men identifying people who haven't had sex education and they're watching porn performers and they're comparing themselves to them. Right. So I think a lot of people wouldn't watch that and necessarily be like, oh, that guy has anxiety or that guy struggles with social anxiety. Like, can you kind of bust this myth and tell us a little bit about your journey with social anxiety?
Yeah, that starts at the beginning of my story.
Tell us about your parents.
God, we could go all the way back there. Like, I really think it, like, when I trace it back, I think it comes back to when I was put in a special reading class when I was in first grade. And I made it up in my mind. I was like, oh, I know what this means. This means that I'm stupid. And I carried that with me like all throughout grade school, and I avoided reading and writing. Like, I just had this like grudge against it because it made me feel stupid. And so I just started cheating on every book report and just like had no patience for it whatsoever. Mm. And in doing that, coupled with not really caring about social activities, like language didn't come to me easily. Like, I didn't start talking until I was four, really. And so I liked doing, and I would socialize by like doing activities like skateboarding or things like that. But then you start to become aware, you're like, oh, everyone else is doing this thing, and like we're all judging each other, and I can't keep up with how everyone else is doing this. And I think that just spiraled into like having anxiety and not feeling good enough, and just feeling like I'm going to look stupid because I just didn't know how to keep up with everyone else socially.
I like hate hearing that. And it makes me even like tearful hearing it. Cause I remember I was put into like remedial classes and stuff like that. And the teachers told my parents that because I asked too many questions, they thought that I just like didn't get it.
Oh my God.
Right. So I would like ask a lot of questions. I would ask why. I'd be like, well, why? You know, I wanted to understand things.
Yeah.
And so I would get put in like the lowest level, whatever. And so my mom was like, fuck this. And she took me to get like a neuropsych eval. And it showed that I was like ADHD and like genius level for certain things. But I processed things slowly. I processed things differently. And then fuck all those teachers. I went to Stanford. So,
nice. Good for you.
But if I hadn't had a parent who maybe looked into that, like I did feel stupid sometimes. And it's just an unfortunate part of our culture that there's this idea of like, what is neurotypical and what are the like correct benchmarks for young people, right? People are always like, oh, are they walking yet? Are they talking yet? Are they feeling yet? Are they making art yet? You know, like all these other ways that we can be. And it's so messed up because then it's can affect the trajectory of what you think you can do.
Yeah. Because once a person changes their beliefs about themselves, like that changes their reality. Like that's how they perceive and reality. They're like, everything's based around that now. And nothing can convince them otherwise in most cases. And it's really unfortunate that like we do that to young people.
Yeah. I have to remember, what the gal's name is, but I don't know if you saw that video for World Down Syndrome Day. It was called Assume That I Can. And it was like featuring a bunch of like Down syndrome, like activists and things like that. And they were talking about like, people assume that I can't drink, so they don't give me a drink, right? People assume that I can't dance, so they don't ask me to dance. Like all these like assumptions about what we can do, which makes people not be able to do things because nobody's practicing that with them.
Yeah. Wow.
Okay. So you're feeling not super smart. You're starting to isolate maybe a little bit more and not feeling super confident with talking.
No, not at all. Oh my God. Yeah. I would always dread social situations. Like at the height of it, I couldn't even go up to an Orange Julius stand in the mall and order because I was just like, oh my God, I'm going to look so stupid. Like this person's going to think that I'm a fucking idiot.
Man, couldn't even get like, an Orange Julius.
It was paralyzing. Yeah. Yeah, the only time in my life that I felt confident was when I was skateboarding. I was like, this is the one thing that I'm good at. Like, this is like my only hope. I have to become a professional skateboarder. Otherwise, you know, I'm just going to fail at everything else. So I got to put everything into this. And that all spiraled into like severe depression throughout my teenage years, too. And then,
yeah, of course. How could it not?
Yeah. Luckily, you know, I was against drugs and alcohol, you know, growing up and throughout my teenage years, because I was like, I have to be a professional skateboarder because I suck at life. And this is the one thing that I'm good at. And I can't let anything spoil that for me. So luckily I didn't get into drugs or alcohol, but then in my early 20s, and my depression was just consuming me. Like every day I was like crying and just like so paralyzed. And I was like, okay, you know what? Fuck it. I'm just going to throw my life away with drugs. And then I won't care what happens to me or like what happens to my family afterwards. Right. Like that's the path that you take. So you don't feel the pain anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, luckily I found the right drugs after like a short little bout of like drinking more. Like I would go to parties and be obnoxious. And then, the next drug was cannabis. And, because that was the easiest one to get a hold of. And then 2 weeks into smoking cannabis, I had no more suicidal thoughts and had a huge boost of curiosity. I had all these questions, started getting into science and philosophy. And I was like, holy shit, like I might actually have a chance at a good life. I'm going to have to do all this research so I can explain to my mom, because my mom is a nurse, and I'm going to have to know my shit if I'm going up against her. So I was doing all this research, and then, found Terrence McKenna along the way. Are you familiar with him?
I don't think so. Tell me more.
He's like the, I guess you could sum him up as like the Timothy Leary of the 90s.
Okay.
He's an ethnobotanist. He has a PhD in ethnobotany, I believe. And I was listening to his talks. He had these brilliant talks. Like I had never heard anyone talk that way or like break down culture and society that way. And then, at some point he started talking about magic mushrooms, and I was like, whoa, why is this brilliant guy doing magic mushrooms? Don't they make your brain bleed? And then I was like, wait, I was wrong about cannabis. What if I'm wrong about mushrooms? So then I did a bunch of research on them and found out that they're non-toxic. And so once I found out that they're physiologically safe, I was like, okay, let's listen to this guy on how to do them. He's saying that you can go in there and you can reprogram yourself. You can ask for help. And so I went into it with those intentions and had the most profound experience that basically summed up my existence for me. Basically felt like my head had split open, and it was showing me how I've been connected to the universe forever and kept telling me everything is everything, everything is everything. And then sat me in what felt like a movie theater room in my head, replayed my life for me, and just showed me that I've been a complete asshole to myself. And it was like, you don't have to have these problems unless you want these problems. And then told me to surround myself with love and I'd be protected by the universe and nothing good would come of alcohol. And so, so after an experience like that, I was like, oh my God, no one ever told me that I was the creator of my reality. Like, well, who the fuck do I want to be? Like, I want to be the most awesome, loving version of myself that I can be. And so I stopped drinking alcohol, which was really weird at 21. Yeah. Like I just became legal. Yeah. All my friends go out and drink, and now I'm having to like go out and like socialize, and I'm just like itching in my skin. Like the first 2 months or so, like going
to like
out
interact and, without alcohol, you mean?
Yeah. I was just like, just dying. But yeah. I was like, the mushrooms told me I have to do this. And so then it became about challenging myself. Like I started seeing like, oh, I just have to keep throwing myself in the fire and I'll overcome it. I'll learn how to conquer it. And
what do you think allowed you to maybe like trust the medicine experience for you and to actually like integrate what you learned from it? Cause I talk to a lot of people who do psychedelic assisted therapies of a variety of kinds. And some people really struggle to integrate the big messages that they get. Was there anything that was helpful for you to be like, oh, I'm actually going to do that, or like helped you really stick with it? Because it would have been easier to just slide back into, you know, the way you were doing things.
Yeah, exactly. I think it was because I was on the edge of hell and ready to jump off. Like, mm-hmm. I had no hope in my life. And then I had this profound experience that gave me all this hope. Mm-hmm. And deep down, I really wanted to have an awesome life. I wanted to win at life, but I had put my consciousness in this box. And I was like, there's nothing beyond this. Life is black and white. Like, I just suck. Mm. And then this thing broke that open and I was like, oh, there's a possibility I could win. So I was really
like seeing something that you can't unsee.
Yeah. And there's no going back. And I went so deep into it. I started getting into meditation and yoga. And I was like, I want to have these experiences without drugs, and just kept going down the rabbit hole of healing. Most of my college life was just, let's go further inward and see like what all we can fix and figure out. Because I had always wondered that too. Like when I first got into it, like I became very evangelical and I was like, everyone just has to do this and we'll all be perfect. and I was so confused by like why it wouldn't work for some people. And I started to think like, well, I think maybe because people weren't as bad off as I was, you know, not everyone is like ready to kill themselves. Like I was ready to kill myself. And I think it's much easier to slip back into your normal habits if you don't have like a big wall being torn down like that. Mm-hmm. Because I think most people have some amount of hope, you know, they're like, oh yeah, if I just keep, you know, trucking along, like I'm gonna,
yeah. So I hear it was more, nice, it felt more like life and death.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was like, oh, I now have a path of life. Mm-hmm. And yeah. So I think I just went gung ho into it.
Yeah. So how did that get you to porn?
So it was a series of steps. of anxiety challenges.
Well, I'm curious too, like before maybe getting into porn stuff and with the anxiety, like how did you feel about sex in general?
I loved sex. I like very early on, like I was the kid that was like proud that he masturbated and was so confused that like everyone else was like weird about it. I was like,
that's cool. Okay, so you were stayed sex positive throughout all that. Interesting.
Yeah. Like within my friend group, you know, of skaters, like, yeah. Like I remember in like sixth grade, I was walking home with one of my friends and I was like talking about masturbation or something. And he like started trying to make fun of me. He was like, this guy fucking masturbates. And I was like, yeah, it's amazing. Yeah, that was the one thing, like, there were, like, a few things that I knew, like, I was very confident about, and, like, I was like, no, this is a great thing that everyone, I'm pretty sure everyone's doing, because why wouldn't you?
All right, so the tips we have so far is eat apples, do mushrooms, and masturbate. Mm-hmm. Top tips for life.
Yeah. So I started, after that profound experience, like I started loving myself, I started loving life, and that just started bringing so many wonderful things in my life. It was like I was open to the flow of life. I was open to what it was like trying to give me and show me. And so I just started having so many opportunities, so many like lovely people that I barely knew that would bend over backwards for me. So I got to see like this extreme shift in such a short amount of time. Like it was all hell, you suck, die to, oh my God, life is incredible, everyone's amazing, I love everyone, and seeing what that can do to your reality so quickly. Mm-hmm. So I started having like serendipitous like moments. Like I was working at a pizza bar and one of the servers was like, oh, you know, like, I'm gonna, you should be a stripper. You're a natural born stripper. And I'm gonna pimp you out. And it was so funny because like 20 minutes after that conversation that I had with her, I got a call on my break. And one of the girls that I went to high school with, she was trying to find a stripper for her aunt's bachelorette party. And I came back in and I was like, Chloe, like, we're in business. Like, this is insane, but like, I have our first gig. So then it was like real community after. Like, I had someone like sew me breakaway pants, and Chloe and her roommate had me practice on them. They're like, we've had a lot of male strippers. Like, we'll tell you like what you need to do. So then I did that. I started stripping. I did that stripping gig, and then my friends at different colleges, like, they had me go strip for the women's soccer team, different sororities. And it was like a once a month thing that I would get one of those gigs, and I was like,
Were you anxious or was it enjoyable?
Oh man. Yeah. So I was terrified in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And there was one moment, like, after I had done like several of them, I think this is pretty deep into doing them. I just remember there was like a whole sorority, and there's like 50 some girls lined up against the walls, and it's at the end of my show, and one of the seniors comes up to me and was like, hey, like, they want to know more about you. And I stood, like, I'm standing up in front of all these ladies in a G-string, and just casually like, oh yeah, you know, I'm going to the Art Institute of Seattle for digital filmmaking, blah, 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 blah. And not even thinking about it. And then like, I left there and I was like, oh my God, buddy, you're doing it. Like, we're doing it. Like, so proud of myself.
Yeah. All it took was wearing a G-string and the confidence just came out.
So then the next thing was go-go dancing, because I wanted something that was more consistent. And I kept talking to my coworkers at the bar about how, like, hey, I want to do this more often. And they're like, well, you should go be a go-go dancer. There was a gay club that was like a block away from our bar. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to do that. And I was like kind of all talk for a while. And then the bartender one night signed me up for the amateur strip competition.
Oh.
And then told me halfway through my shift, and I was like literally wearing the worst pair of underwear I own, like bleach stains and holes. And then So I called up every gay friend that I knew, and I was like, hey, can
somebody bring me some underwear?
As soon as we close up the bar, I have to run down there and do the strip competition. But I ended up winning the competition, and then they hired me to be a go-go dancer. And then that was a series of steps of like conquering that. Like, mm-hmm. I had to have sunglasses in the beginning because I couldn't look anyone in the eye. And I was also wasn't confident in dancing. Like, when I was stripping for the girls, I would just like hump them on a chair or like, you know, just grind on them, do push-ups on them. So I was terrified that everyone was going to make fun of me that I couldn't dance. So I would just like hold on to the railings and I would kind of just hump. And then over the years, it's just like watching the other guys dance. Like, I started picking up, you know, more moves and like just feeling myself more. And then eventually I could do it without the sunglasses. I could look people in their eyes and not fear their judgment.
Yeah.
Now that the weather is starting to get nicer, at least in my hemisphere, it's time to secretly listen to sexy audio stories while you're outside enjoying nature. For listeners of the show, Dipsy is offering an extended 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/SNS. If you're like me and have boarded the steamy story train, I see you, ACOTAR fans, I have the thing for you. Dipsy Stories is an app full of hundreds of short, spicy audio stories. I personally love an immersive experience, and Dipsy is awesome at that. They bring scenarios to life with immersive soundscapes, realistic characters, sexy accents. If you're also into otherworldly superhuman creatures, Dipsy has a growing library of fantasy series with werewolves, Greek gods and goddesses, Regency-era historical fiction, and fairy smut to explore the bounds of your pleasure. But they have new content every week, so there is probably some topic for you on there if fantasy is not your jam. For listeners of the show, Dipsy is offering an extended 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/S&S. That's 30 days of full access for free when you go to dipsystories.com/S&S. dipsystories.com/S&S. And once you have worked up an appetite with your fantasy fairy lovers on Dipsy, nourish your body with an easy-to-make Factor meal. Head to factormeals.com/sluts50 and use code SLUTS50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off of your next box. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Sometimes I like things slow, but in my busy day, a tasty quickie is just the thing for me. Factor is your solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Factor offers a wide range of menu options and dietary preferences for you to choose from. Just head to factormeals.com/sluts50 and use code SLUTS50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code SLUTS50 at factormeals.com/sluts50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off of your next one while your subscription is active. Now, back to the episode. I mean, I hear that some of that confidence came from, like you said, like taking some of these smaller steps, having support. But you also mentioned, you know, with your medicine trip, like trusting more, I guess, the universe about like that you could handle what was coming your way. But any other things that for other folks listening who are maybe struggling with some of that anxiety around moving their body and being seen by people, like, was there anything else that kind of helped you flow through it or like kept you at it? Or was it just practicing?
I think it was just practicing, just throwing yourself in the fire constantly and just little by little rowing in that area. I think there was also a deep desire for me to, like in my family, like none of the men dance. And I've always had like this real, what is it, like anti-status quo,
The fuck you attitude
in me. Yeah, I'm like, what? Yeah, the me fuck too. Like, what you guys are doing is backwards, and I know it. Like, I had this deep knowing that like there's something wrong.
Yeah,
I don't trust the way like these parental figures are going with their culture and
very skateboard culture of you.
And living in Seattle, like there were always these opportunities to go dancing. Like everyone that I met would always go dancing. And so I wanted to be cool and I wanted to get laid. And so, so I was always like, oh, I gotta do this. And I think at a certain point I realized like, oh, this is something that I deserve. Like I deserve to be able to move my body and feel myself. And this is something that was deprived of me by toxic masculine culture that I was raised in. That only feminine men dance.
Well, also, what's wrong with being a feminine man?
Yeah. Nothing.
Okay, so you're go-go dancing. You're making eye contact. You're getting more comfortable.
Yeah. So I conquered that level of my life video game. And then I went off on a journey with an ex-girlfriend, moved to Vegas. She got into porn. And then we didn't like Vegas. Moving from Seattle to Vegas was really hard. Like not being able to walk anywhere in Vegas was a struggle for me. And then so we're like, why don't we move to Los Angeles and we'll get closer to your work and you'll have less of a commute. And then her agent saw me and thought that I was cute and asked if I wanted to try. And I was like, oh yeah, like there's a once in a lifetime opportunity. And I was kind of disillusioned with my career at that point. Like I was working at a stock footage company, just producing motion graphics 45 hours a week. Mm-hmm. It just was robbing me of my soul. So yeah. I was like, yeah, sure, let's try this out. And so then that became like the final test of my social anxiety. It was like, have you conquered it all? Mm-hmm. Like, because getting into porn, like, it brought up so many, like, it was like revisiting all my past insecurities and everything. So it was like a thorough test of all of that. Just over time, I mean, it really took me about 2 years to conquer everything that it was throwing at me. Mm-hmm. But from my past lessons, I knew that I just needed to keep face planning until I figured it out. And so about 2 years in, I was like, oh, they keep hiring me. Like, why don't I just have fun with it? Why don't I like stop overthinking everything and just have fun? And then that was when I really got my flow.
Yeah. And I know I've talked about this on the show for listeners before, but like, what were some maybe expectations that were squashed when you saw like the behind the scenes of porn, you know, just like things that people assume, especially around like male talent?
Yeah. Man, when I first got in, I thought that you just had to be like fucking just just plowing away like the whole time. And so I remember just like almost hyperventilating myself because I was just like, I gotta fuck like a porn star, right? Like, this is how porn stars fuck, right? And I'm so glad that I like realized like, oh no, you can like take your time, you can, you know, chill out. You don't have to like go full speed the whole time.
Yeah. Well, for a lot of people too who have anxiety, obviously it can affect their ability to feel into their erection and like ejaculatory control. And so I'm curious, like with the anxiety, like was that something you had to work through or did it not really affect you that way?
Oh yeah. Yeah. It affected me so much. Like I was up, down, up, down, up, down.
Which is like normal for humans, but also like, you know, obviously being in your head and being anxious isn't going to help.
Yeah, no. So like, yeah, in the beginning it was, yeah, majority of my scenes, it was like, I would get hard and then I would get anxious and I would get soft and then we'd have to cut and I would have to calm myself down. Yeah. And at first I didn't realize that I was like, oh, I need to calm myself down.
Yeah.
So you're just kind of
that must be so tough in the moment with everybody like waiting.
Oh my God.
That does not help with erections.
No, not at all. Not at all. Yeah. And so you're just like trying to figure your body out on the spot. And the clock is ticking.
The clock is ticking.
The clock is ticking.
I thought that's what you said. Was there anything that helped you calm down?
Yeah, I think early on...
Was it somebody yelling at you to calm down? Just relax. Just chill.
I think early on, like, my go-to technique was if I buried my face in a vagina and just kind of close off a lot of my senses, and then I could just pretend like no one else is there. And then like, I could just eat some pussy. And then if I got some feedback that they liked how I was eating their pussy, like it would calm me down and clear my head. And then I would be hard and I could come out and like do the scene.
Yeah. But which is a tool that we would use like in sex therapy, not necessarily quite in that way, but like not focusing on yourself, right? Coming back to some other kind of sensory experience, slowing things down. Sometimes it's like increasing sensation for some people, and sometimes it's decreasing, the overstimulation sensation of other things. So like you were doing like a therapeutic tool of, focusing on the moment to moment sensation and focusing on partner.
I remember like long before porn, because I was pretty anxious in, of course, like I had all that social anxiety. Like when I was first hooking up with people, I was pretty anxious. And like the first time I would have sex with people, I would kind of struggle. Mm-hmm. Cause I just couldn't get out of my head. So yeah, one of the first techniques that I learned was like, oh, focus on your partner, focus on their pleasure. Like, you know, get away from yourself and just like have fun, you know, helping them feel good. So I think that was like one of the first things that I brought into porn.
Mm-hmm.
Even though there was so much going on, I was really scrambling. Like, God, I remember like one scene, like I started thinking about like my head, like I was just tail spinning. I would like think about this and that like, oh, the camera's over here. Like, oh, can they see
it? Yeah. It sounds really overstimulating.
Yeah. 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 So I think that was, desensitizing. Like one of the things that I really like is like, when my partner goes slow and just like really connects with me, like I almost see it as like, because I've had people early in those days, like when I was kind of paralyzed, they would start going fast and aggressive
and you're like, trying no, I to need like you to slow
shake
down.
Me out of it.
Yeah.
And it feels like someone's going 100 miles per hour when I'm like, I haven't even like started my engine yet. And it's like,
I feel similarly. And I've talked about this on the show before with people talking about like erotic blueprints and like, what's the kind of style that you need. And some people are more like sensual, in terms of like, they get in their head and they really need like the environment and the connection to feel safe enough, right enough in order to like drop in. And I think a lot of people have shame about that because they think they're expected to like just go quickly as opposed to like, it's okay if you need 20 minutes or more to like actually start being open to connecting. But I imagine that's harder on set. And maybe something you can do with yourself too in preparation, but still, but then you bring in another energy and cameras and stuff, and you have to take some time to transition.
Yeah. I really have to have that like energetic permission slip from my partner. I can't like, I just can't get off on using. Like I'm such a giver. So like, one thing I have to have that energetic permission slip. I have to like connect with them and know that they are welcoming my energy into their sphere. So that's one thing. And then also if I'm anxious, I have to like help myself or maybe have my partner help me like calm down and like find where they are. So then we can go off on this journey together.
Yeah. Have you ever gotten pushback on set for like maybe needing to take that time or pausing and stuff? And I wonder what that's been like.
I mean, the general idea is that anything that takes longer than 30 minutes, you're done. like they're not going to continue with the scene most likely.
That's so much pressure.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's this really interesting phenomena where you can like kind of like force yourself so much that you can like not even be fully hard, but then you're like on the verge of coming, and it's like
you can come if you're not hard.
It's like an anxiety orgasm.
That probably doesn't feel very good.
Feeling ever.
Yeah.
So I've had that happen a few times early on where you're just like, you're like struggling and you're like, no, I gotta fucking get it there. I gotta get there. Come on, go. And then the girl starts touching you and you're like, fuck, like what the fuck did I do? Ah, we gotta stop.
Yeah. No, that sounds like a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, I hear some of the maybe struggles around it. What have been some of your favorite parts about it? Not the anxious coming around being in the
scene. Thank you for coming.
What do you love about anxious coming?
Oh man, anxious coming is so embarrassing.
It also sounds kind of like dissociative too, right? And what we would call like I don't know, just like incongruent desire and arousal, right? Like you're able to maybe have enough arousal to have ejaculation, but you're not, your heart's not in it. You know, you're not having desire. Okay. So what do you like most about it?
Just the general porn experience.
Yeah.
Man, I've had so many beautiful, deep connections. And I think that's been so much fun. Just, like it's been a spiritual experience in a way for me. Like I've had like these transcending moments with people that I have just met. Mm-hmm. And I think that's so beautiful that two humans can achieve that without, you know, knowing each other, deeply. Mm-hmm. And all the different people that I've met a lot of really interesting, awesome people.
Yeah. Everywhere. Yeah.
I think those are my two favorite things.
Yeah. Sounds like a lot of opportunity for some really cool connections.
Yeah. Yeah. And an opportunity for some really weird ones.
Yeah. I was going to say any you want to share, but then it would probably be hard to keep it anonymous. Yeah. Okay.
You know, so some that, you know, the chemistry just doesn't, you just don't. You're like, what the fuck's going on here? Like, yeah. Why is this not flowing?
This is a question I've asked sometimes of guests before, but what do you think makes good sex? Or what do you think makes a good sexual, quote unquote, good for you sexual partner?
Good for me.
Yeah. Or like, how would you define good sex?
Transcending space and time. Like being like, yeah, almost like losing your body.
Yeah. Like, we've on the podcast, I interviewed someone, they were talking about like that the experience of that is like flow state, that you get into a state of flow. Yes. So you're like lose time. You're like, and then other people, I think, describe it more as like a spiritual experience. Mm-hmm. So some people, yeah, describe it as flow state, and other people, it's a bit more of like a religious spiritual experience for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would say it's a bit of both for me. You know, after my profound experience with magic mushrooms, you know, I see us all as one. Like when I look into someone else's eyes, I just see a different version of myself. And yeah, I think it's so beautiful. Like when someone else is that open, that they can experience that with you without, you know, even having known you for long at all. I think that's incredible. And I think it really shows that we all have this, like this deep underlying connection with everything around us and everyone.
Well, it's interesting too, in terms of like the connection to everything as well. So one last thing I wanted to ask is that obviously we focused on a few things, but we focused a lot on the adult industry. And I think sometimes people in adult work, a lot of the people that watch them or their viewers or their fans don't always like see them as a whole person or sometimes because performers don't want to share every part about themselves, which they don't owe to anybody. But as we're talking right now, I'm seeing some of your art behind you. And I'd love to hear a little bit about your art and some of the other things that you do, because you do a lot of things.
I do a lot of things. Sometimes I think I do too many things.
Yeah. Yeah. I understand that. ADHD is fun.
Yeah. I've been a painter since I was...
Are these your paintings behind you?
19. Yeah, I made these.
They're amazing.
Thank you. Yeah, I've been doing that since I was 19. 37 now. So was that 18 years?
I don't know. I'm not good at math, but it sounds like a while.
That's crazy. Yeah, it's something that I just kind of fell in love with. Something that I can like lose myself in, and it expresses this deeper side of me that I need to get out.
It sounds like that's sort of the connective tissue for you, is things that like bring you into that flow state and like transcendence of some kind.
Yeah. 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 Because I think without that, you know, because I lived prior to that experience, I lived without that connection to, like, whatever you want to call it, source, God, like whatever that deep underlying thing that is the foundation of life. I lived without that, without knowing that. And so all I had was, you know, like the material game that we all play, the superficial game. And it just felt so disconnected, and I didn't feel good enough for it. And so, yeah, it's nice practicing this, like, oh, there's something beyond this, like, weird game that we all play. There's something deeper that I'm connected to. So, I think it's directly connected to that.
So what's the next level for you on the video game?
Next level on the video game?
Or have you completed? God. Are you just playing it again? Have you done all the levels?
Yeah. Man, that's such a good question, because, yeah, in some ways I'm kind of bored with porn now that there's not a challenge.
Mm. Yeah.
And I'm currently trying to figure out, like, what is next. I'm getting back into digital filmmaking. Uh-huh. I started working on that again this year, actually. It's my first year back.
Yeah. I don't know how this lands with you, but I think this struggle comes up for me too, of like, how do we know when we don't need to challenge ourselves anymore? Oh. You know what I mean? Like, I think in our culture, in capitalism in the US, you know, there's such a push to, like, that there's more, right? There's more, yeah. there's more, like, we have to keep going. We have to get better. We have to get a new model. We have to do this thing. And so, like, when is it enough to just, like, be in something that is, like, good enough? You know, otherwise it creates a lot of, like, FOMO for me. And so I come back to this question that you're asking a lot, is like, okay, if something isn't new and challenging or whatever, does that make it bad? You know, like, is it boredom, or is it, like, capitalistic trauma? Like, what, I don't know what the answer to that is necessarily. And it's hard, because as a therapist, I think there also is this push as well, that, like, oh, we can always uncover more. There's always another shadow. There's always, like, another thing to uncover. There's always more work to be done. It's like doing the dishes, right? You, like, think you did them, but then they're here again. So I don't know. I don't have an answer for you about what you're saying, but I think, that's a struggle for myself and for a lot of people, is like, when is it enough? And, like, does something have to be challenging for it to be okay to keep doing? Like, is it okay if we do something that's, like, a little bit boring and easy sometimes?
Yeah. Fuck, man.
Let me know if you figure out the answer to that philosophical question at some point.
I mean, there's a lot of truth to what you're saying. It could be the baggage of growing up in a hyper-productive capitalist system.
I mean, I also think some of us, like, I don't know, tell me how this lands for you, but some of us don't, like, feel safe with things being, like, okay and unchallenging, right? Like, I hear, maybe I'm just projecting this, but I hear for you, a lot of the, like, growth and, like, loving life happened from, like, throwing yourself into the fire.
Yeah.
And so I think for those of us that maybe learned that way or grew that way, if we're not feeling that sort of, like, intensity, it's kind of like, well, is it going to be, what's going to happen, right? Am I going to fall back into that, like, hellscape? Is it going to be, I don't know. I wonder about that too, for myself as well.
Yeah, because I think there's always, like, a worry of, like, am I not being productive enough? Like, am I not, like, growing enough?
Yeah.
And it's like, relative to what? Like, what's the metric that I'm, like, that shows me that it's enough?
Yeah, because then we'd be human producers instead of human beings, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's definitely a balance, I guess. And I think growing up in the system that we grew up in, I think we're skewed we're always like skewed to like, no, I have to be productive. I have to do all this. I have to do that. Otherwise, right. my life is inadequate.
Yeah, or not meaningful enough.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I think, yeah, since I moved into this new place, I'm in a new environment. It feels much more connective here. Like, I'm really loving it. And it's kind of been inspiring me to, I want to start like a weekly group where we like meet up at a park and we just talk about spiritual things or do spiritual practices, yoga, breath work, meditation, and just see what happens with that. Like, I've been feeling called more and more to bring that more into my life. Because I've kind of like the past few years, I think since I got married, like it brought up like these old, like, oh, is my life impressive enough for my parents? Like, is this adequate? Like, am I doing it well enough? Like, and I think I started projecting what I think my parents' ideas of like a successful life is. I started projecting that onto my life. Mm-hmm. Because, oh, I did this big, serious adult thing now. I got married. So I have to be a serious man now. And it was really weird. It brought up like this old, or like this, baggage that was lurking in the background.
Yeah. The like expected trajectory.
Yeah. Yeah. It took me a while to figure it out too. Like, I was like, oh, what the fuck was going on with me? like, I started getting really attached to, like, the timeline of our life. Like, oh, like, in a few years, we got to be moving out of LA. We got to go find a house in another state. And we got to do this. And I want to have a lovely house with, like, a lovely farm in the back. And we're going to have this. Yeah. It's getting so rigid and not accepting the flow of life. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it kind of made me spiral out there a little bit. So, yeah, I'm coming back to like, oh, yeah, I need to reintroduce these spiritual practices and doing it with a group. Like, I want to connect more with a group of people who do it. Because the last place that I was living, like, I mean, I was out in the valley. I was out in Tarzana, and there wasn't many, at least not from what I saw or found, there wasn't many I think people who like really wanted something like that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Well,
and finding more of that balance between the, I got to be productive and having more complete balance.
Well, now that we've triggered everyone's existential crisis, how can people connect with the work that you're doing and find you?
Oh, yeah. My website is robbieapples.com, and that'll give you all the links to all my social media. And I'm always producing content, and I'm starting to make some funny content with a couple of guys in the industry, Sean Alf and Nathan Bronson. We may be branding ourselves as the Valley Boys. We'll see. We might be making some merch eventually. It's a little project that we have going that's just starting up, but we got a few very interesting video ideas coming up. Did you happen to see the horse we did a construction one?
No, or which I saw one? I saw like a cowboy one with horses. Yeah. Everyone should watch that.
Yeah, yeah. What was it called? Oh my god. Oh, the Great Clitoris in the Sky. Yeah, there was that one. And then the first one that we did was a construction one, which was like kind of just a music video of us with power tools and like just thrusting. But yeah, we got several more ideas that we're going to try and get done this year. So I'm looking forward to that.
Awesome. Well, Robbie, thank you for joining. Listeners, stay tuned. Don't forget, eat apples and masturbate.
Masturbate, yeah.
Robbie, thank you so much for joining. And listeners, again, if you want to follow what I'm doing, I'm on Instagram at Sluts and Scholars, on X or Twitter, whatever, at Sluts Scholars. You can listen anywhere you get your podcasts or at slutsandscholars.com. Please don't forget to rate and review and check out the awesome advertiser discounts. Thank you.
Sluts and Scholars, a podcast for professionals who prioritize pleasure.
Sluts and Scholars is a podcast produced by Sluts and Scholars Media, LLC. It is a shame-free educational podcast made for your entertainment and informational desires only. The podcast, any opinions we share, and any resources, including social media and emails from us, are not therapy, medical care, or professional advice, and do not create a patient-client relationship. None of the information, opinions, suggestions, resources, or exercises mentioned in this podcast should be used without clearance from your healthcare provider. All opinions, information, and ideas expressed by the guests are solely their own. If you need emergency mental health or medical help, please call 911 or 988 or go to your nearest emergency center. We hope you enjoy the show.